a lot.
Okay, I want to start by bringing together what we've seen the last 2 weeks and then taking it to its next step. Let's start with what we ended with last week. We ended last week that after the Kuzari, the Chacham, gave his whole take, I shouldn't say that, gave the perspective on what the Beis HaMikdash was, culminating, basically laying it down as the kind of like the brain of the Jewish people. And we'll get back to that. Understanding that the Beis HaMikdash was like, he compared it to the connection between the neshama and the body. The connection, the Beis HaMikdash was created, the neshama of connection between the neshama of Klal Yisrael and Klal Yisrael. But you know what? Let me just briefly just run through it again. We have a neshama connect with everybody, right? And we said, how does it connect with the body? By feeding the body. You starve your body for 3 days, the neshama goes away. You're not feeding the neshama. The neshama is not getting your food. But the food is nourishing the neshama's connection to the body. Neshama will only connect to the body when the body meets certain conditions. This is exactly what's going on with the karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. The karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash is what connects Shemayim va'aretz, right? Yaakov Avinu called it Zeh Shah Shemayim. It's what connects Shemayim va'aretz. And the avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, the karbanos, set up with all the avodah of the kohanim, is what nourishes the connection between the neshama of the Jewish people, which is the Shechina, and the Jewish people. And this is where everything comes from. This is where the Shechina flowing into Klal Yisrael through the medium of the Beis HaMikdash is where all the material bracha came from, or the spiritual bracha came from, etc. So, we ended last week with the Kuzari king asking, if so, then today you're like a body without a head, because you basically were showing how it's mamish like the brain of the body. And the Kuzari's, the Chacham's response to that was, like a body without a head? We're not like a body without a head. We're like dry bones. We're like dry bones. That's what we are today. So this is where I want to start from. It's the understanding that our existence today, qualitatively, the Kuzari called it dry bones, based on the Sukkim of Yechezkel. They said that was the vision that Yechezkel was seeing, that valley full of dry bones that then got back together. The Gra put it a little differently. He said that the difference between before the destruction of the first base of Mikdash and afterwards was the difference between a live body and a dead body in terms of the vitality of the Jewish people, vitality of the Jew. He said from then it deteriorated to a spoonful of slime that stays after the body goes through the process of decaying, decomposing, until there isn't even bones or a spoonful of slime. He said that's where it's holding today. Tarva derekev. So what we want to try to impress upon ourselves is this understanding. When we're talking about spiritual vitality, there's a very, very broad range. When we think in terms of alive or dead, either you're alive or you're dead. But even in physical terms, it's not exactly so. Picture a person who's lying in bed, can barely see, can barely hear, can't taste. Any food that's going in is going through pipes and stuff, okay? And there's noise, there's music around him, he barely hears, it's very faint. Is he living the same life that you are? Is he in the same place that you are? He's not even aware of everything going on around him, right? So to knock into our heads the understanding that our life today is that. We are living in Olam HaZeh, the Olam HaZeh that Hashem intended for us. This is an Olam HaZeh that's basically with the power turned off. We are not hearing, we're not seeing. We think we are, right? A blind person, as long as he doesn't get to acquainted with seeing people, thinks that this is all there is to existence, right? Not missing anything.
When I look around, I see a pretty vibrant Yiddishkeit. How does this help me imagine something I can't imagine?
Oh, so Baruch is saying, we're seeing a very vibrant Yiddishkeit. And the truth is, Baruch Hashem, we do have a vibrant Yiddishkeit. But this is exactly the point. What we're trying to bring home is, and it's true, we're working backwards. This is the challenge of the Bein HaMitzarim. It's to understand that all of this vibrant Yiddishkeit is qualitatively a dead body versus a live body. That this is not it. And here's where I want to come back and, yes, tie up everything that we saw the last 2 weeks. Kind of almost like we call it a subject in itself, bringing together what we saw, but Bezus Hashem, then we'll move further. And that's the understanding that what it all boils down to, everything that we saw last week about the Beis HaMikdash, is really bringing us back to what we saw the week before, of understanding that the experience of living as Am Yisrael was meant to be the experience of living with the live Shekhinah, of experiencing the Shekhinah in our lives. And I want to repeat the mashal briefly that we said the other time, again, just in order to draw off it without all the dramatics, of children who are growing up in the jungle, far from home, and can hear about all the characteristics of being home, right? They're lost in the jungle. They hear about a home where you can control the weather, where you're protected from leopards, where there are warm, hot meals being served. And they can hear it all as a very utopian existence. But the one thing that they're not hearing is that these are all just symptoms of, and when he hears it, it sounds to him like the woman who's serving the meals is a technicality. The tachlis is the meals. The tachlis is that instead of sleeping on leaves, you have this cushion with blankets, etc. That's a beautiful life. But he doesn't understand that this is all the chitzainius of the experience of living enveloped in the love of parents. And this is the quality of life that we're missing. To be living in the embrace, in the live embrace of the Shekhinah. Whatever spirituality we might have experienced now does not begin to compare to the quality of life of a Klal Yisrael with the Shekhinah pulsing in a very tangible way in their lives, where even the people, we saw that the ultimate of that was Nevuah, where Hashem actually connected with a person directly, live, spoke to him, and as we saw from the Kuzari 2 weeks ago, that was mamish going to Olam Hazeh in this world. Right? He tells him once a person had that experience, the mechitzas between Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba became completely, how do you say it, tushtash. Right, blurred. Like, I'm here, I'm there, right? You were moving in and out of Olam Haba in this world, right? And a Navi, once he had that experience, all that he was waiting for was, well, will I have that experience again? Nothing else was geshmak anymore. Nothing else was geshmak anymore. Anything you could possibly enjoy paled. And therefore, it all just turned into, will I have that experience again? But as we saw, that was the highest level of it. But this manifested on very many levels, right? We talked about the Jew who put in effort to work on some area that needed improvement, the Shalom Bayis, right? And then, when the grapes started blossoming, they were the size of basketballs. His wheat were the size of kidneys. What was this? It's not that it's so geschmack to have, you know, instead of watermelons, you use grapes. But it is that the thrill of this stroke on the cheek from Hashem in such a live, tangible way, when you saw that interaction on a regular basis, this was a quality of life, right? Living with that live dynamic, it was a quality of life that we are completely disconnected from. And we think that, yeah, Baruch Hashem, we have a vibrant spiritual life, but the truth is that we are settling for the existence of a dry bone versus the existence of a live person. In terms of the quality of life of Olam Hazeh, again, in those great times, the great times that are ahead, Also, the differences between Gashmias and Ruchnias were blurred because it all came together. The thrill of the Ruchniasdik experiences and the Ruchniasdik significance of the Gashmias was all part of the quality of life, right? And what was the power plant of all this? And this is already last week. Up to now, we're talking about 2 weeks ago. The power plant of all this was the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was where, through the Karbanos, we fed the connection of the Shechina to Klal Yisrael. And there I want to say also, there are various degrees of this, right? We understand it's not a question of yes or no. Even today, Hashras HaShechina is something of various degrees. You know that Hashem is everywhere, yet we say that Shechina is at the Koysel, the Shechina is in Ba'al HaMos of Halacha, the Shechina is in Beis Knesses, because there are various degrees, right? Then too, it could be to various degrees. To appreciate the Achrayas that rested on the Kohanim, because they were the ones who were actually activating the power plant. Through the Karbanos being done right, the Shechina rested in the Beis HaMikdash and flowed from there to all of Eretz Yisrael through its various veins, right? We said it came to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. From the Kodesh HaKadoshim, directly it emanated in the form of Torah and Nevuah. The intensity, the electric charge of Shechina coming straight from the Kodesh HaKadoshim is what provided Torah and Nevuah to Klal Yisrael. But then you also had it flowing through the Menorah. That came in the form of Chachma, intellectual ability. We have great intellects today too. But that divine intellectual ability was something that, again, we have no shaykhs to today. When we talk about the Geshmak of the Peiris of Eretz Yisrael, right, that the pshat that the Ramban was saying, Tikkun Chatzos, he was weeping. And he said Tikkun Chatzos in Spain. Why? Because he bit into a fig and he said, that's not a fig. And therefore he sat and he wept Tikkun Chatzos in order to be zeichet to the fruit that I'll describe, right, the Peiris of Eretz Yisrael. What's the pshat? The pshat is you were experiencing the flow of the Shechina through the Shulchan, which manifested in material bracha, right? It manifested in fruits of a completely different quality, of a superhuman, a supernatural quality. The quality of the fruits, right? You were tasting Hashem's love in your life in a tangible way. And this, again, like the Kuzari told us, this is the significance of the material promises in Michu Kaisa, right? All the Rishonim ask, why are the promises of reward given in terms of material, right? When we talk about Olam Haba, he says this is Olam Haba, experiencing Hashem. When we talk about the Shalom and the material plenty, etc., etc., and the health and all that, we are talking about experiencing the Shechina guarding our lives. The way the wars worked, when the Shechina was optimally in Klal Yisrael, I'm not remembering exactly which examples we gave and which we didn't, was that Klal Yisrael, there was no, you know, at the time of the Shoftim, until the drop of actually asking for a king, in the time of the Shoftim, there was no organized army. That was part of what made the people nervous. They felt that they weren't on stable ground. It wasn't an organized army. When there was a threat, what happened? The ragtag, you know, they got together, you know, a bunch of chlop-lop. Look at the Mefarshim, the Vayro, when it talks about the term Vayahom, Chazal say, is only used up until the time of the Melech. Last time it's used in Shmuel HaNavi. That was how the battles work. A bunch of people got together, kind of, there was no organization. They got together, went out to chase the enemy, and Hashem just made them drop before them. There was no... David HaMelech lamented over the fact that we reached a place where we have to be Lelamed Yehuda Keshes. We have to teach people warfare. Right? This was already the Rivas Adairis. Once Klal Yisrael asked for a king. Once they asked for a king, they wanted things to be organized and proper, then you needed it to be organized and proper. But before that, but again, what was the significance of it? The significance of it was that you saw Hashem battling your wars. And the Kuzari says it was the thrill of that you see the rest of the world running according to natural rules, while everything in Eretz Yisrael is completely not according to the laws of nature. This was the thrill of living with the Shechina. And this is what we're missing now. This is what we're missing now. So to bring this home a little bit more, just in terms of mitzvah day. So first of all, I want to bring out the point also that we appreciate the achrayis of the kohanim, because it could have been to different degrees. Let's say there are karbanis, all kinds of halachas of karbanis, right? There are things that are kosher lechatchila, things that are kosher b'diyev, not ma'akev, right? Whole concept of not ma'akev, the achrayis is learned from karbanis, right? Let's say you bought a karban in a way that was b'diyev. So connection was a little bit schwacher. The flow of the Shekhinah was a little bit schwacher. Someone making a wedding that night was a little disappointed because the grapes were not the same as they were yesterday. Right? But if you think about it, it goes a lot more than that. Now you understand the Achais of the Kehanim, the Diktuk, they needed to be setting up the tuning to be as optimal as it could. The higher of a quality that they operated, Kehanim had to be operating with very, very great precision, Diktuk Halacha, and fast, right? And therefore, they were training and exercising for that all the time. The higher level their performance was, the greater was the connection. Right, the electricity was, the charge was great, and that was intensified further by their kavanas. The more kavanas they could put into it, the more dedication there was there. Passion combined with the diktuk of the halacha created that much of a greater connection. This was the achrayas that the Kohanim carried. It wasn't pashut. And again, we're completely missing that connection now. It's a dead Klal Yisrael. It's a Klal Yisrael without its source of vitality. Now, to take this a little further, I want to read another piece of Kuzari. Just in order to understand the reality of living on a whole different spiritual reality. Like by us, Ruchnius is something abstract. We feel it sometimes when we really put in efforts to connect. But he asks about, can you explain to me I'm moving back a little bit. We are in Mamar. Mamar Shani. Eisnun Zayn. The Kuzari King asks, I'm skipping a little bit, but this is after the Jewish sage goes on a long description of quite how intense the demands of the Torah are. So he says, who can actually observe all this? So Amar al-Chover. Al-Chover says, and this is continuing what we've been saying, but it's going to move us on to the next stage of the discussion. Who can keep up with all these demands? So he's continuing on the thing we've been discussing. If it's all about, well, you'll see it in the next world, it's very difficult to keep it up. But you know what? We kept up these demands because the feedback was instant and on the spot. Where both the anticipated schar and the punishment were immediate responses. This was the way of life. But Tzoni Loimar, that its observer and its punisher are right there, ready to provide immediate feedback. That's the Shekhinah. Look what Yeshua said. When he's kind of like, in his parting words to the Bnei Yisrael, when he's kind of like challenging them, daring them, will you be able to keep it up after I'm gone? So he tells them, you're not going to be able to keep up with Hashem's standards. You're not going to be able to manage to live with Hashem among you. Kim Kedoshim Hu. Kedoshim, he demands extremely high levels. You're not going to be able to live up to it. And here he's talking to Adar that were extremely pious and conscientious. So, I'm skipping a little bit. This was part of the experience of living with Hashem. Any infraction was immediately responded to. Miriam with the tzoras, right? Gives different examples. We have to get into the examples now. But different examples of where there was something happened that was immediately punished. The schar and the einish was all a part of life. There was always divine feedback. It was live interaction going on all the time, right?
In this environment, why would someone ever do Avodah Zarah?
What's that?
Why would anyone ever do Avodah Zarah in this environment?
Why would anyone ever do Avodah Zarah?
Yeah, the fact that they're immediately according to the consequence, just the answer, why would you listen to it?
Oh, so the answer to that is that lemaisa, it's beyond us. But when Hashem provides such a great experience of the Kedusha, he provides equal opportunity to the sides of Tumah. And therefore, the Yitzhar is something that we know, Chazal did away with it, something that's beyond us, but it was there in very powerful form. And for example, in the Aseres HaShvatim, there was a certain buildup. Made its way in a little bit. Certain people were tempted. If it wasn't immediately obliterated, and that already caused a certain pagam in the Shekhinah there. That's why the deterioration of the Aseres HaShvatim, their sense of Shekhinah was dropping much more rapidly than in Yehuda. All of what we're describing now, right? The more incidents there were that weren't responded to very, very harshly and instantly, caused less Shekhinah, which caused more ability to do Averis, which caused more and more and more, right? And this was Lamaisa, the buildup in both cases that ultimately led to, but the temptation was there with everything that was going on, with all the reality they were living with. The temptation was there, and part of what was demanded was of them was to be able to withstand it. Continuing a little, part of the reality of living with the live Shekhinah was we're talking about the negative side of things. We talked about the positive side of things the other day, but a person a little bit wasn't as careful as he should, a little bit of lack of Shmiras Halashim, right? And oop, sprouted on the wall. You got your feedback, right? All of a sudden, you know, you opened up your closet to take out a shirt, you got your feedback. Either you made sure to step up your learning Chafetz Chaim, or maybe you saw it on your arm. But let's remember, this is the other side of the coin. The first side of the coin is all the different manifestations of the Shekhinah that were in the Beis HaMikdash. You walked in there, you saw the divinity. You saw that the Shekhinah was busy, right? You walk into Hashem's house, and like you hear him in the other room, right? I had this chus I have my father's first cousin is married. Don't try to follow the mishpachologia here. Is married to Reb Chaim's niece, Reb Chaim Kanievsky's niece, and his shviger, Reb Chaim's sister. They live in the Stipler's old house, Rashbam 10, and they divided the apartments. Shviger lives in half, and they live in the other half. There's a glass sliding door between them. There was a period where Reb Chaim would come to visit his sister every week. Reb Chaim would come to visit every day. Came to come visit his sister every day. So we had protection on the family if we wanted to catch Reb Chaim in a very, very serene, quiet moment. We'd come to them at like 8 in the morning. He was a sikin. He was sitting relaxed in his sister's house. Nobody was there. It was this quiet time. When he came to visit his sister, he didn't have coffee with her. He sat and learned, and she was busy in the kitchen, and she puttered around him. He visited his sister every day. I just remember coming, there's a certain sense of, you know, I came to them when I one time wanted to come see Reb Chaim. So I came to them, and I sat down. I had breakfast with them, with my cousins, right? And there's the glass door, and you hear a chair scraping on the other side of the door. You know, it's Reb Chaim, you know, going like that as he's learning, right? There's something awesome to it. Awesome as in the dictionary word, not the, right? Afterwards, I wanted to see him. Okay, fine. But I'm just talking about that. You know, you hear a chair scraping. That's Reb Chaim right there, right? Lahavdil. But here we're talking about, you walked into the Beis HaMikdash, the Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni. I just heard this from Moshe Shapiro, in a recording, obviously, where he said that the Bayis Sheni, when they understood the Shekhinah wouldn't be present there, they didn't want to build it. And what's the point? They didn't want to build it. It would be without the presence of the Shekhinah that was manifest in the first Beis HaMikdash. They had to be tempted through certain promises of Giluyim, of Torah, Shabbal Peh, whatever it is. But you walked into the first Beis HaMikdash, and wherever you looked, you saw the Shekhinah busy, right? Whether it was the fire that was Yerid Min HaShemayim on the Mizbeach, right? Which was what he calls the Kavod Hanir, showing you that Hashem's down. I'm here, look, I'm here, right? The Ner Ma'aravi and the Menorah, the other Nisim that took place there, right? You saw the smoke of the Mizbeach just going straight up. Hashem is busy, right? And you also saw it in this. A little bit lax about the way you spoke, and the splotch on the wall, right? Gentle warning, do what you need to do. Do your tshuva, go through the process with the kohen, you'll be okay. You're not careful? Kasha yechzak ha'inyan, if you continue not to be conscientious about it. And then, you know, it would start showing up on the skin, right? And then you had to bring in a kohen who was able to discern. But listen to the way he put it, right? We always think of it in terms of, we have to look at the mare, right? See, is this the right shade, the wrong shade? That's how he says it. The kohen would look at it in order to discern, is this Hashem or is this a rash? That's what he puts it, right? Is this Eloiki or is it not? Right. Okay. I'm skipping a little. Umami menu mizgi. What is coming from? You know, fungus. The chachma mufla. Now you understand the ankus of the chachma that the kohen had there. I understand why Hashem was so strict about that when he said, "Ishama benegat zonas." I'm giving the kohen the ability to discern where I am issuing a certain warning on your arm. So you better be very careful with that. Right? And now I want to continue a bit further, because the Kuzari says, Omar al Kuzari, so the king says, Rebbe, if you're okay with the jumping? Kuzari is a safer of tangents. The whole safer is tangents, right? He jumps from subject to subject. That was the way a lot of this farm didn't work. So he says, oh, once you talked about Tuma, can you explain to me the concept a bit more? So the Chaver, the sage, begins by with a disclaimer and saying, we're not even going to try to plumb Hashem's intellect. And he gives a few localized understandings of certain different Tumas. I'm skipping a little bit in this paragraph. Now, he continues and says that Seidai keneged koyach hachayus v'haruach. He's working into the same thing we've been discussing now. This is not all a continuation. I'm jumping around different places in the Kuzari these weeks, right? He says the pgam, tuma, again, we think of tuma in halachic terms. Nevela, sheretz. Made a person tame. Tame meant you weren't allowed to eat truma, right? You weren't allowed to, until you went to the mikveh, then you were allowed to eat truma again. Those were the effects of tum, right? You're allowed to eat kodesh again. He says, again, that's because we're living today without the life behind it. So for us, it's about symptoms. What are the symptoms? Not allowed to eat truma now. Not allowed to eat kodesh now. I have to keep out of the Beis HaMikdash now. He says, but no. Again, there was actually a compromise in the person's vitality and spirituality at that point. The person felt a certain dulling when he was tummy. He touched an avela. Beinenu masig behefsedaze, but a person will not sense it. We today, you know, we can play catch with an avela. We're not going to feel anything, right? The only person who will sense this is, again, you have to be living in the reality of those times with all those heightened, again, you're half dead. You're not going to feel it, right? If you're numb, if you're under anesthesia, someone gives and comes and gives you a slap on the back, you're not going to feel it. We're not feeling it now, right? But he says, the only one who can really sense the effect, because of its delicateness, the people with very refined spiritual sensitivity, elevated souls, the people who are really trying to maintain that connection to Hashem, the people who are putting in the efforts to actually access Nevuah, right? These people suddenly felt he's been working toward the Nevuah, right? Working on all the different aspects of Torah to be able to reach the peak and connect. All of a sudden, he tripped over a sheretz. Ooh, he dropped. He feels how I was getting there, and now, like, significant setback. Okay. So he continues and says, I don't want to spend the time reading through the Lashon Kodesh here, but he continues and says, people who deal with very, very delicate things, wines, let's say, So for me, wine is wine. It's all the same. Can't handle this. But you know, the people who can really tell you the difference, right? So very, very fine things can have a bad effect on it. That again, a guy like me, I won't know the difference. And give me a wine that a 15 shekel bottle and a 600 shekel bottle, it all tastes the same. But apparently there's even such a thing, I heard from somebody, that sound waves can affect wine. Right? And you want to keep it in a, if you're really a mumche, you're not going to drink it in too thick of a cup, because it's contained differently. They're like very, and also it should be like this and not like this, or vice versa. I don't know exactly. And the glass should be thin enough, but not too thin. So he says, when it comes to the nefashos, this is how it was with Tuma also. He says, the sensitive person will feel a disturbance in his nefesh when he was in the same house as a mace. But a person who is of a more coarse nature won't feel anything. So he says, we can all sense this also when it comes to spiritual sensitivity. He says, even in our times today, and I'm adding, even in our times today, when we want to be maintaining our spiritual sensitivities, you know that, let's say you feel like you reached a certain madriga, you had a certain tefillah, or like you feel like you're holding in a good, high, sensitive place. And then you sit down with some chevra, friends, relatives, whatever it is, and there's just coarse, lightheaded discussion. It takes down your level. Or, it's a yeshiva snoshim, right? Sitting with women of the opposite gender, socializing in a way that's not l'mahadra, right? You can't go out afterwards and then feel the same spiritual sensitivities that you had before that. They said, for these people, that's what Asheretz did. Because again, they were that much more alive. They were that much more alive. And here the Kuzari goes on and says, okay, so now I understand why this is not an issue of, right? People might say, why is, let's say, shichva zera, right, semen? Why is that more tame than, let's say, feces? Feces is so much more disgusting. But we understand that that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the sensitivities of the nefesh. It's a whole different system. It's got nothing to do with disgusting. It's got nothing to do with natural properties. It has to do with, if you were living at that level of spiritual sensitivity, you would just say, yeah, that's what it does, right? A person who's allergic to milk, right, can drink garbage, he might be disgusted, but he drinks milk and his body reacts in a much worse way. And he continues and adds and says, these are the properties of living with the Shekhinah. Again, the Shekhinah was to call Yisrael like the nefesh, the soul in the person. This godly vitality provided them with this ziv v'hadar, this refinedness, this radiance, which manifested in their bodies, it manifested in their personalities, and it manifested in their homes. And when the Shekhinah distances itself, then they lose the ability to be right on in terms of counsel. And their bodies just become more coarse, less sensitive. They lose their beauty. Okay. Now, on the other side of the coin, we keep on bouncing back and forth between both sides of the coin. I'm just going to say outside now some of the aspects that the Guzari discusses in a few different places. A karban, right, we often discuss the significance of a karban, right? What's the pshat in a karban? Why does it get a person closer to Hashem, et cetera, right? If you really want to try to appreciate the Olinian, Rav Hirsch is a great resource for that. But whatever it is, the whole discussion is once again, if we're going with the Kuzari here, it's again a symptom of not living with it. And the Kuzari says, later in the Sefer, he says, we can discuss, we can theorize why, what the significance is, but he says, if you were actually in the time when karbanos were bought, it wasn't relevant. Because, for example, what he says is like this. He says, let's say you take an egg. And you know that, or he gives a different example. He says, you know that a husband and wife uniting produces a child. Now, if you just hear about that in a theoretical way, you just hear that in a theoretical way, you should say, why should it be that way? Like, why this? Why exactly does, you know, and if it won't follow exactly that course, follows a little different course, and it won't have that effect, then we don't ask those questions because we see this is the reality. That's how it works, right? Or if you're told, you have a chicken, lays an egg. You want the egg to hatch properly, you have to keep it in a very precise temperature. Not too high, not too low. Now, if you never really follow the system, you might think, okay, if it's a couple of degrees off, nishke ferluch. But if you already have experience and you know that at that precise temperature, it hatches. At less than that, it doesn't. And at higher than that, it doesn't. You're not asking kashas, why did Hashem set it up that way? It's a reality, right? So he says, people lived in the time of the karbanos. When you bought a karban and you experienced its effect, so all the theory became not relevant. Again, I don't know exactly, we're trying to convey things here that we never experienced, but he says that there was a certain, you just experienced this certain expansion. I don't know what that manifested in. It's not like a flash of clarity, greater sensitivity, but he said you just experienced this like whoosh of everything about you just became more expanded, right? And you knew the effect of a karban. That's what a karban did. Right? It brought you closer to Hashem. In what way? What do you mean in what way? Bring a karban, you'll see, right? This is, again, the vitality that we're talking about. And then he goes on to say, when he talks about Shira, and I'm bouncing around between different places, he talks about music. He talks about music. And he says, today, who are the mumchim of music? Who are the balabatim of music? He says, the lowlifes. They're composing our music. He said this 1,000 years ago, 1,300. It depends on who you believe wrote Kuzari. But he says, if you consider the fact that back in the great days of old, who were the ones composing music? It was the likes of David HaMelech, Shmuel HaNavi, Mikoyach, the greatest of our people. Right? David was using the same abilities of a David HaMelech composing Tehillim, with all of his spiritual sensitivity, with all the chachma that went into his Torah, right? Music is a very, very great chachma, right? We know that there's that it's a science, right? We know that it's a science. He says, in those days, you had the greatest, it was the greatest of our people who were doing it. The people who you went to for the greatest psukim, those are the people we got our music from. Why? He says, because the music was adjusted. Music has an effect on the nefesh. We all know that, right? Music can change your mood. Music can get you going, get you excited. It can move you to tears, right? So Victor Miller used to annoy people by saying, people think that music is something spiritual. They said, it's a stimulation. A feather tickling the ear is a stimulation. Music is an emotional stimulation. He says, it all depends what you do with it. Just sitting and singing, if it's not channeled into something, has no more spiritual value than tickling your ear with a feather. People hated when he said that. He said, yes, eating is supposed to bring you to Avas Hashem, and when music is used right, it can bring you to Avas Hashem, or it can bring you to Ritzicha, right? Or it can bring you to very powerful experience of nothing, right? That's often what it does. A very powerful emotional experience of nothing. But you can use music to get people into a certain mode, right? I remember I was once showed, I saw once they were showing how well this is used in the entertainment industry. They showed a video of an alligator, a crocodile, whatever it was, walking on dry land. An alligator walking on dry land is a little bit clumsy, kind of like clumps along, right? So they showed you the same alligator, the same shot twice. It's about a minute clip. And one time they have, now the alligator is walking and the music is going bum, 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 right? This is a scary scene, right? And then they showed it again, and this time the music is going, thrum, thrum. All of a sudden it's funny. The alligator walking is funny, right? So he says that the music of the Levim and the Beis HaMikdash was composed by these people, and it was played at the time of the Karban. The purpose of it was to get the nefesh of the person into exactly the right state, to fine-tune it in order to get the maximum impact of what the experience was supposed to be, of the scene of the Avodah, of the experience of bringing a Karban. The music was supposed to bring it ad hasof, right? And it was designed perfectly for that, right? When a person came out of the Beis HaMikdash, he was in a completely different place. He was in a completely different place. What we're coming back to from all this is this understanding. We today are mistapik b'mu'at. We think we have a life. We think we have a life. Gashmius and Ruchnius, again, it's not supposed to be two different realms. The fact that it's two different realms is again a manifestation of the fact that we are dead, dry bones. But the thrill of Ruchnius and the Geshmak of Gashmius just all was one inseparable unit. And today, we take a piece of stale, dry bread and we think we're enjoying luxuries. To realize this is not the Olam Hazeh that Hashem intended for us. This is not the Olam Hazeh that Hashem intended for us. Hashem intended our experience of living in Olam Hazeh, our experience of a physical life, was supposed to be of a whole different quality. We're living today with the lights off, under anesthesia, not feeling anything, barely hearing, barely seeing, barely tasting, and we think that this is the life. Not to be mistapik b'mu'at. And to understand that Hashem has a much more rich, glorious, vital experience intended for us. And to understand that He wants us to be back at His table. And to long to be back in His embrace, Be'ezras Hashem. Okay, stop here. Next week, Bli Neder, we'll move into the Kuzari's whole take on Lamaisa, what are we doing in the Gullus? And how should we set our sights? Okay.